nanohub.org. You can follow along with this presentation using printed slides from the NanoHub. Visit www.nanohub.org and download the PDF file containing the slides for this presentation. Print them out and turn each page when you hear the following sound. Enjoy the show.
Okay, I think we're good. So if we'd like to welcome Dr. Richard Hudson. He's the Director of Science Production at the Twin Cities Public Television in St. Paul, Minnesota. And he's going to be sharing with us today about Dragonfly TV and their nanoscience education efforts. And we'll turn it over to you.
Okay. Thanks, everybody. We're happy to have a chance to talk to you about this new series. And I have with me Angie Prindle, who is one of the producers of Dragonfly TV Nano, and Joan Fries, who is our manager of publications, promotions, and the web, and Lisa Regala, our science editor, who has overseen all of the content here and dealt with scientists there at Northwestern, has a terrible cold and sounds like a frog. So she declined, and we'll just have to cover for her today. We also want to thank Bob Chang, of course, who helped set this up and was one of our advisors on the project, and Mark Anderson and Leslie Hemming, whom you'll see in some videos a little bit later on. Dragonfly TV is a half-hour science show that's seen on public television stations all over the country. And we are now in our seventh season. That's what the nano programs are. Our theme has always been real kids doing real science, built on the concept of kids doing scientific inquiry as defined in the National Science Education Standards that came out in the mid-90s. And our challenge here was to build 6 half-hours all about nano. The NSF, to whom we applied for funding, said, well, wait a minute. You have a tradition here of kids doing all sorts of science in big activities. How are you going to do something small? And our answer was, we will get these kids using, working with scientists and using the tools and techniques that scientists are using to see the invisible. And what we're going to show you today is some of the things that we have done to... Are we seeing it?
Were we running it up on that computer?
Yeah. So we... so that we can show you how we've tried to make this content accessible for middle school kids. One of the things we did with this differently from our previous episodes, which were really kind of a science variety show, for this one we realized that it's going to be very important to create a scope and sequence because this stuff is conceptually difficult. And so at the beginning, we started, and this was Joan's first job, to take a look at what we knew and work with partners to develop this scope and sequence. So I'm going to throw that to Joan, and if we can see that PowerPoint there.
So, as Richard mentioned, traditionally we haven't had a scope and sequence. Our shows previously all aligned with science themes, and in the case of our museum series, they aligned regionally by the city we were shooting in. But with Nano, we realized pretty early on that the content was considerably tougher for kids, and so we went out to research who was already thinking about Nano education. And you can see from our PowerPoint, we... used much of your own work there at Northwestern and University of Michigan and also North Carolina State. And then we also plugged into the NISE network, which is an NSF-funded program through for nanoscale through museums. And from that research, we ended up with 6 shows. Each show has 2 segments in it, which is the traditional Dragonfly setup. And you can see the first show here is Size and Scale. It includes just an introduction to the nanoscale and shows both the macro world and micro world and the nano world, and it includes examples of nanoscience and nanotechnology in everyday lives. And the kids go out and do sort of scavenger hunts for nanoscience, and they also are introduced to some of the tools. They see microscopes at Harvard and also in North Carolina. The next show is Structure of Matter. It includes a piece about carbon nanotubes in hockey sticks. And also in North Carolina, again, butterfly wings, where the kids see that color in some butterfly wings comes from nanostructures and not from pigment. Show three, small is different. The first segment is about surface area, and the second segment, stained glass, deals with nano gold and nano silver in stained glass. Forces at the nanoscale is the very popular gecko feet and nasturtium leaves and hydrophobic qualities. Show five is applications, including self-assembly, and then in Oregon at OMSI, bone regrowth. And the final show, Nanotechnology in Society, we do a piece in Pennsylvania on water cleanup, and then in New York at Ithaca, a piece on nanosilver and in stocks.
Then I think we should give you a sample of how this translates into the show, and we'll just play the beginning of the first episode.
Coming up on Dragonfly TV Nano, we're counting billions, searching for Nano among us, and discovering that gross is good.
Major funding for Dragonfly TV is provided by the National Science Foundation, supporting education and research across all fields of science and engineering. The National Science Foundation, where discoveries begin.
Someone. It's Dragonfly TV. Dragonfly TV. Let's go, Dragonfly TV. Dragonfly TV.
I'm Eric, and we're back with a brand new season of Dragonfly TV. And this season's new star is Nano. Every episode is about the nano world, or things that are really, really small. In fact, nano-sized things are so small, you can't even see them.
Why would we make a TV show about things you can't even see?
No, we're not crazy. You see, the nanoscale may be small, but it's going to have a big impact on everything. Some say that nanoscience has started a technological revolution. See what I mean? May I have the future, please? Thank you. Breakthroughs in nanotechnology may bring cool and eco-friendly cars, shirts that change color instantly, or new ways to kill cancer cells. So how small is the nanoscale? What about a strand of my hair? Is this nano? This single strand of hair is about 100,000 nanometers wide. It's pretty hard to imagine something that's 100,000 times smaller than a human hair, right? Now, I know this sounds crazy, but sometimes, in order to understand how small something is, you have to start big. Let's join Ebony and Jasmine on their nano quest.
That's my cousin Jasmine, and that's me, Ebony. We're only 13, but we've been around long enough to notice how gadgets keep getting smaller and smaller. MP3 players, cell phones, computers. My mom says it's all because of nanotechnology.
We know nano things are really small. What does nano actually mean? We're on our way to find out.
We heard about these funny jugglers called the Nano Brothers at the Museum of Science. Does that mean they're teeny tiny jugglers? What do jugglers know about nanotechnology anyway?
Amazing Nano Brothers Juggling Show! Joel, what are you doing?
Can you people see anything on top of that ridiculous little stage? Human beings can't see things measured in nanometers. A nanometer is a billionth of a meter. That's a billionth of this.
Don't worry, folks. I came prepared.
Oh, you did?
I did. I brought one of these. Oh. A magnifying glass.
I still don't think Joel quite understands how small a nanometer is.
Isn't it weird how you can't even see nano-sized things?
I know. A billion nanometers in a meter. I mean, it was really nice of the Nano Brothers to let us use this meter stick. Maybe we should try and find something the length of one nanometer, something so small that a billion of it would fit on a meter.
Slow down. We don't even know what a billion looks like.
If we can look for a billion things, then after that, we can look for something one nanometer long. A nano quest.
So that's just the beginning of that segment. And what happens is the two girls first go out and find, try to get an idea of what a billion is. One of the experiments they conduct is counting the number of blades of grass in a football field. And it turns out, to a pretty good approximation, that's a billion. And then they go chasing, well, what's a billionth? And that's where they go to the labs at Harvard and try and see increasingly smaller images until they finally get down to an image of some fibers inside a computer chip where the dimensions are one nanometer. And they finally succeed in their quest. So that sets up the introduction. And then we move on to some other segments. And Angie's going to tell you a little bit about the challenge of trying to turn these concepts into a story that will engage the kids who are watching on Saturday morning. So I'll throw it over
to you. Okay. Well, we one of our biggest, goals as we do this is to try to create a very kid-friendly context for the science that we are talking about. And we do that in a lot of ways. We really try to find friendly hooks, whether it's, something historical, something cultural, something fun that kids can be able to grasp within a 5 to 7 minute segment and really take away with them. So the way that I approach these when I have written and produced some of these segments is really to find the elements in the science itself that can really mean something to the kids in their daily lives. And a lot of times what I find is something related to the science that's just amazing, surprising, strange, unique, anything that really stands out, and then to try to translate that into a really kid-friendly, simple way to tell the story. And the other main goal that we have when we do this in presenting the science is to tell the story in a way that's fun, that uses humor, that's playful, and that the kids can really connect to. So when we go out and shoot these stories, we do have a full script with us to focus on what are the key points of the science that we have to get across. But we often do go off script just to capture some very real unscripted moments with the kids working with museums and scientists so that they are learning as they go, and when they're learning and they're so excited about it, they're really getting it and they're truly engaged, so it ends up being a natural element to tell the story. So that's one way that we help to get the performance and then the story as well as genuine as we possibly can. Keeping time in mind, I'm going to move on to showing you another segment on our stained glass. It's called Stained Glass, and it appears in episode number 3, which is Small is Different. And this was a segment that we shot last summer at Northwestern with the help of Bob Chang and his students, particularly Mark Anderson, who is a PhD candidate in the Materials Science and Engineering Department. And I will play that for you now.
I'm Aletti.
And I'm Yvonne.
And we live in Chicago.
And we love exploring it.
Chi-town, the city where I'm from as a kid to who I become. Live to be what I want, Chi-town.
What do you think we should do next?
I heard Masai is having their anniversary. Maybe we can go check it out. Let's go.
Welcome to MSI.
MSI.
MSI stands for the Museum of Science and Industry. They've always got so many cool things to see here. We checked out the U-505 submarine.
Let's go!
Look out! And an exhibit called Genetics. That's where we saw a baby chick hatchery.
Look, it's the glasses man. Let's go check it out.
We read that ancient Egyptians invented glass making over 4,000 years ago.
I didn't know glass was made from sand.
Right, it's really hard to believe that all this brown, gritty stuff makes these beautiful pieces of glass.
I also didn't know that glass was made from metal, like copper.
Or silver.
What's that about?
It was cool to see how many different things glass goes into. Some of it's really useful, and some of it is totally artistic. The museum has all kinds of special shows. Today we found a demonstration all about glass blowing. We met Annette and G. Bryan, who are both glass blowers from the Corning Museum of Glass. They take drawings from museum visitors and make them into real glass objects.
Well, if you girls would like to make a design, we'd be happy to make it out of hot glass for you.
Let's do it.
We're gonna make a beautiful dragonfly today. Now, we melt clear glass in our furnace. 2,100 degrees Fahrenheit, it's the same temperature as a volcano. We add the color to glass by rolling it through crushed up colored glass called frit. And frit has metal added to it. It's metals that give the glass its color. Even back in the Middle Ages, glass artisans were using different metals to color the glass.
That got me thinking. What would it have been like to be a glassmaker way back then?
Where are we at? I think we're in the Middle Ages. Let's make glass. Is the glass done yet, m'lady?
I think it is. It's beautiful.
I think it's a dragonfly.
Oh, cool.
What do you think of the dragonfly?
It looks just like the picture.
It's awesome.
Thanks.
It's red, it's green, it's yellow, it's blue.
This is the stained glass that we're about to do.
The Bode Studio of Architectural Arts is a family of stained glass makers that go back six generations. And then we met Aaron Bode.
Hi.
Hi. We were curious how you color your glass. Do you use crushed up glass with minerals and metal in it like the glass blowers do?
Yeah, we do use minerals. In the Middle Ages, they used gold and silver to color their glass.
Gold, like my bracelet?
Yes. Gold would make a red similar to this piece of glass right here. And the silver would make a yellow amber like this.
We just didn't get how gold could make red and silver could make yellow. So we headed off to investigate. We went to visit Mark, a graduate student at Northwestern University.
So what can I do for you ladies today?
We saw some stained glass, and we were just wondering how gold and silver could make colors like red and yellow.
Well, it's because of nanoscience.
Nanoscience?
I thought that had something to do with robots.
No, that just means something is really, really small, right?
You're right. A nanometer is really small. When you have gold and silver nanoparticles that are that small, they give you different colors than the gold and silver that you normally see. Here we have gold and silver.
The silver looks white, but the gold actually looks gold. We struck gold.
We're rich.
Is this nano gold?
Not yet. It's actually a gold compound. In order to make the nano-sized gold, we have to take it through a chemical process. First step is to weigh some out and mix it up with water.
Let's do it.
We mixed up the gold with some water and put it in a special plate with a stirring magnet in the beaker so the solution got stirred and heated up at the same time. Once the gold solution started boiling, we added a chemical, and after a few minutes, it turned dark red.
Wow! So, what was it about the gold that made it change to red?
When we added the second chemical, it starts clustering the gold up on itself to make little particles. They interact with the light differently, so you see different colors.
We tried silver too, and saw that white silver powder became yellow once the solution was mixed. We experimented with more gold and silver particles and got even more colors. The gold solution gave us red and purple, and the silver solution gave us yellow, dark yellow, orange, red, and purple too.
Science is beautiful.
Scientists can be beautiful too.
I am beautiful, no matter what they say.
How are these nanoparticles turning these solutions different colors?
Well, it has to do with the size of the particles.
How do you know how small they are?
I can show you. Let's go take a look.
Then Mark fired up his scanning electron microscope for us. He took pictures of the nanogold and nanosilver particles from each solution we mixed.
They're so clumpy.
Yeah, these small particles with some of the chemicals that we added to the solution, it makes them want to stick together and make larger and larger clusters.
Mark told us that it was the size of the particles that affected the colors we saw.
I want to measure one of the particles from the purple solution.
All right, so just pick your particle and draw a line. It's almost 17 nanometers across.
We looked at the pictures of our nanoparticles and took measurements of the particle sizes.
Then Mark showed us how to turn our solutions into sun catchers by mixing them with a special plastic.
Then he baked it in the oven, just like cookies.
Thanks for answering our questions. Bye.
See you later.
We decided to make a chart that compared the size of the nanoparticles to the colors we saw.
As we increased the size of the nanoparticles, the colors changed. And now we know why gold turns stained glass red and silver turns stained glass yellow.
It's so cool that the people in the Middle Ages were using nanotechnology and stained glass and didn't even know it.
It was cool of them to put gold and silver in their glass to make these cool colors and did different experiments just like we did.
I wonder if we're artists or nanoscientists. Maybe we're both.
Okay, I'll jump back in here. So I'm sure you can get a sense from watching that segment what a big deal it is for us and how thankful we are to have scientists and partners that we can rely on to help us tell this really complicated science. And it's really special. We wouldn't be able to do these investigations without our university partners. They go to very often great lengths to get us through these investigations. They help us tell stories. They are involved in many steps of this process, from brainstorming ideas about experiments. They act as science consultants as we script these shows. They help us find locations to shoot. They lead us to people who can appear on camera. They help us run experiments, oftentimes, you know, hours outside of their regular work. I know that Mark was helping us out. Mark Anderson, who you guys know, was helping us the summer that he was planning his wedding, and he was just putting in a ton of time, and we were so appreciative of that. So the scientists and partners we work with are really true collaborators in every sense of the word. In fact, Bob Chang really helped us out a great deal. I think he struck a once-in-a-lifetime deal with us in giving us the secret to his Soda Pop and Rocks explosion kit, which we used in our surface area segment that we shot in Minnesota. So we were able to use Bob's experiment and have the kids do that, and it turned out fantastic. So thanks again to Bob. Next, if you could just press play on the next slide.
A slide or video?
The next slide in the PowerPoint. And one more time. So we feature a two-minute segment in every episode that we call the Scientist Profile. And essentially what we do in this is just we show kids how cool it would be to become a scientist. And we work with a lot of different scientists in all kinds of disciplines across the field. But essentially we focus on like a typical day in the life of any of these scientists, showing the work that they do and how important it is. But equally as important as the work is who they are as people, what they do for hobbies, what their interests are. And we really have a goal to make scientists appear as accessible and down-to-earth as they are, to really demystify the stigma of a scientist as someone who's alone in a lab, and really bring them to light as people who are fun-loving and smart and engaged in all kinds of different activities in life. So that brings us to our next clip, which is the scientist profile of Leslie Hamming, who is a PhD candidate at Northwestern in the, I think she's in material science and engineering as well. She's a student of Kate Brinson and Phil Messersmith. And we worked with her when we were in Chicago this last summer as well.
Let's go!
I'm Leslie Hamming at Northwestern University, and I'm a muscle scientist. Not these muscles. These muscles. I study muscles because these guys have very, very fascinating, sticky properties. They can stick to everything, wood, rocks, and even each other. Inside the mussel's shell is a tongue. Every so often it comes out of the shell and it deposits its glue. Our lab is working on ways to copy the amazing glue of these mussels. But if you can imagine, if we made a Band-Aid out of the mussel's glue, we could have an everlasting Band-Aid. As test subjects, mussels are very well behaved. The mussels are very easy to work with. They just kind of sit there.
Just sitting around. Oh my.
It's really not practical to get our glue directly from the mussels. So instead, we make it chemically. We want to mimic what nature has already created. Admittedly, we are pretty far off from her elegant solution, but we're getting close. So after we make our chemical version of the glue, we coat different surfaces with it and test its adhesive properties. We have found that it's one of the strongest bonds in nature. Here's an image of tiny nanoparticles that have been coated with our mussel adhesive. And the goal of this was to reinforce plastic with these mussel adhesive coated particles. And this way we can make super strong plastics that might have the potential to replace metal in airplanes and cars. I was a professional triathlete for 2 years and I was on the US national team. To be a good scientist, it's really important to have passion for what you do because it's that desire that will keep you coming back to the lab and discovering new things.
So we have a profile like that in every one of the six shows. Another feature in the shows grew out of a conversation I had. Why don't we go back to the video and we'll be able to start. Go back to the video menu and we'll take a look at. This is a program called Shapes of the Invisible, which is the work of a French filmmaker and microscopist. And he's made these amazing videos that are where he starts with a macroscopic object and creates a continuous zoom with his electron micrographs down to as far as it can possibly go. We're going to give you a little sample of the original of this here. Let's see. Uh-oh.
Just a second.
Let's see if we can get back to our video. And the challenge was to take the original, which is beautiful, but a little too didactic for our audience. And there we go. This is a mint leaf. And you'll hear the narrator talking about what we're seeing. Can you hear the audio?
It hasn't started yet.
Oh. So we start by looking at a mint leaf. And the zoom begins. Do we have audio?
No, we don't have audio on the DVD.
Okay. Okay. Because of our switch here, the audio is missing from this. But it's a very deliberate narration that accompanies this slow zoom, talking about some of the features you see. We felt it wasn't really appropriate for our audience. So if you can drop out of this video, we'll show you how we adapted this with our host. We're still using the same video, but we're treating it a little bit differently. And this is all part of the challenge of trying to translate these difficult ideas into a language that that our kids will understand. So let's see here. Okay. We call it the Zoom Cab.
All right, Zoomer, you ready to go? What's that toothpaste smell? You're right, Zoomer. This is a mint leaf. And those veins right there bring sap up into the leaf. And you see those hairs? They help the leaf hold on to its water. And what is with all these bubbles? Well, those are where the mint smell comes from. Whenever a bubble breaks, minty fresh. Let's zoom in a little closer. Ooh, whoa! You remember sticky, bumpy, shaky? Well, it is really bumpy here on the leaf's surface. Even though to us, it looks and feels pretty smooth. Now let's zoom a little closer, shall we? Yeah! Oh! Now we're magnified 8,000 times. And inside here, we find the chlorophyll, which makes the leaf green. It's stored in those egg shapes right there. But let's zoom in even closer. Wow! It looks like a cave painting down here at the nanoscale. See those striped bands? They are 1 nanometer wide. And this is the heart of the operation, where carbon dioxide is converted into oxygen. Oh, I know, Zoomer. You can't go past the nano size. Let's get on out of here.
Watch out behind!
Again, there's one of those in every show. And I urge you to take a look at Shapes of the Invisible. It's available. You can find it at Amazon and get the DVD. It's really a remarkable piece of work, and we were very lucky to cut a deal so we could adapt them this way for this show. The last thing we want to show you from the show itself addresses a question of the concerns about nanotechnology as we begin to implement it. The Museum Network has done a lot of work with forums where adults are talking about some of the concerns and how should we deal with the challenges of nanotechnology. And we felt it was our obligation to do that same thing for our kids' audience. And here's what we came up with. This is also a short segment which appears in every show and looks at some of the questions we want kids to be thinking about.
Hey, wait a nanosecond!
Is it important to learn about things at the nanoscale?
Yeah, definitely.
It's a brand new thing, whole new world to discover.
We'd be able to do a lot of things that we haven't done before.
I don't know, I'm just a kid.
We can understand more about nature and patterns and things like that, so we can develop new and more interesting technologies.
Yep.
I think it is important to learn about nanotechnology because it can help cure cancer.
I'm thinking. That's a hard question.
It concerns me that some bad things might come out of nanotechnology.
I definitely think it's worth researching, because if bad things do come out of it, we have to understand what they are.
It seems like a really great thing that can help a lot of people in the future.
Well, this just started, so.
A whole new world.
Say that again?
Yes, we have a lot to learn.
Now, all of these segments that we've shown you here today will also appear on our website at dragonflytv.org. And Joan is going to give you a little introduction to that, as well as the other educational resources that we're creating to accompany the show.
Hi. One of the hallmarks of PBS programming is that we work really hard to extend the impact outside of just beyond broadcast. And for Dragonfly TV, that includes our website, which is quite robust, and print educational print resources, and an outreach program. So for our website, which is located at pbskids.org, which is a leading kids destination, and the benefit for us for being piggybacking on the PBS site is that we get really good traffic. Our site receives about 2 million page views each month. And we repurpose all of our TV video assets for the web. Here you can see a page that for our video is served in Flash, and this is a page which each segment in an episode has its own page. And so the text then tells what the kids did in their experiment, and at the bottom of the page here we give kids ideas what they can do at home. So our videos for the episodes are organized by topic areas that are sort of Dragonfly TV, body and brain, earth and space, living things, matter and motion, and technology and invention. And the next slide, we have scientist profiles. We have about 90 scientist profiles from our 7 years of production. And we work really hard to include scientists from all endeavors in all areas of STEM. And also we aim and work hard to find diverse scientists. And our do-its are sort of fun tabletop experiments that kids can do at home. Most of the materials they need are not are things that kids can find on their own around the house. And we give them the directions, and then we ask them at the bottom there, they can let us know what happened with their experiment. And we have six, for nanotechnology series, we have six new do-its out there. And then we also have, and the do-its are popular, our message boards are really popular as well. Kids come in, and it's all monitored through us, so kids aren't freely chatting with each other, but they are, we do find little, I guess, waves of community that kind of come and go. And the most popular part of our website are our games. And we actually had a little video here to show you, but I'll just talk you through this. This is the game board for something we developed for nanotechnology called Nanobots. And you can see there's a little bot on the left there. And what the kids do is toggle through charges. And there are charges on the board. And they see how things work with forces at the nanoscale. There's a little water droplet there. And the kind of one unique thing about the game is that kids can create game boards for other kids to play. They can modify the game boards and upload them. And then kids can play the courses that other kids supply for them. And let's see, what do we have here? This is our zine, which I see you have on the table there at Northwestern anyway. I sent out some packages. This is, we do this every year with our series. This year we developed a new format to go with Nano and included the little magnifier. And these get distributed through, there's 350 PBS stations nationwide. And most stations have someone on staff who's outreaching with the community, and they also get, they're very popular with classroom teachers. Here's an insert we developed for the NSTA. It will be in their December Science Scope Journal, which is for middle school teachers. And this is a game board, and the bottom there, the bottom color stripes you can see are actually game pieces that kids can cut out. And then it's sort of, you know, there's rules on it, and they use a die to move around the board and get asked nano questions. Normally, we insert into both the elementary and the junior high journal. When we started user testing this, it was playing pretty high, and so we're inserting in the middle school this time. And that goes to 25,000 middle school teachers across the country. The sort of big project we do every year is our Educator's Guide. It's a 75-page piece that at the front we talk about inquiry, and in particular we introduce the dragonfly steps in inquiry. And then for each segment, there's a small icebreaker activity that takes anywhere like 10 to 20 minutes, and then a larger inquiry investigation that can take anywhere from a couple hours to a couple days. And I sent an example along of one of the early pieces that we've developed for Nano, which is on self-assembly. And all of our materials are aligned to national science standards as well as NCTM math standards. And all of this material is used in our outreach program. In the last several years, when we worked with science museums, we did a lot of our outreach efforts through the science museums and often working with the partner PBS stations in their communities. And here's just an example of some of the ones that we've done in the past year or two. We were at the inaugural Cambridge Science Festival working at the MIT Museum. And you can see there the girls in the picture were actually some of our kid stars from the piece that we shot at the MIT Museum, and they're there explaining what they did. Then at the Science Museum of Minnesota has an annual 36 Hours of Science, which is for their community-based science organizations. And there, sometimes we bring cameras and let kids be on film, either chatting about science and their ideas about science or actually doing experiments on film, which we then post on the web for them. And we have an ongoing relationship with the Museum of the Rockies with their paleontology department. The video that we shot on baby dinosaur eggs out in the field with them is actually on their museum floor in kiosks, and they also use our materials in an ongoing fashion in their teacher prep. So we're happy to be working with universities this year, and would like to offer all of our materials to you, and also you know, if you would like to partner on events and that sort of thing. And so here's some contact information for you. It's our website on PBS Kids. We have a press website, and if you link on the left, if you go to our press website, which is dftvpress.org, on the left, there's a link that says More Nano Videos, and you can see a lot of our work, work in progress. For if any of the print materials that you've seen, please feel free to contact me. And if you're interested in partnering, if you have outreach efforts of your own, you could contact my colleague, Margaret Duden. So I think that's it, and we're...
One of the points we want to make is that the show is created in such a way that the videos are cleared for all educational uses. So that means anyone in an education network, whether it's a university or a science museum or a school, can get hold of these videos and use them to illustrate or teach or energize a program however you want. And we also have a pretty good inventory of the print materials and the teacher's guides and the DVDs. You'll be getting some DVDs anyway through your participation in the series, but they'll also be online. So we really want to make them available so they get used in any setting that's appropriate. And I think that brings us to the point where if there are any questions, we're happy to try and answer them.
This is a question from an invitation from Professor Chang. We are having the Global Nanoscience and Engineering Workshop next week in D.C., and he was wondering if a participant, somebody from Dragonfly TV, would like to come and participate at that workshop.
You should send us a little more information about it, and we'll see what we can do.
Okay, we'll try. And then you would be able to bring some of your materials there and also highlight the videos.
That would be great.
Yeah. So if somebody wants to download or get hold of your videos, they just go to that website?
Well, right now, the PBS Kids website, all of our nano content will probably be going live on Monday, but that doesn't yet include the videos because we do some audio work on them for rights issues before they get posted. The press website, you can look at nano videos there right now already.
Okay.
And that's the dftvpress.org, and then there's left-hand navigation there that says More Nano Videos.
And the shows will begin airing on public television stations across the country in the end of November. And the way they'll roll out is there are 6 shows. They will begin in late November and run on PBS stations, and then we're going to feed them again. So over those 12 weeks, people will have an opportunity to see the shows twice. In addition to the online distribution.
Okay, great.
But if you're interested in any particular video that's been hinted at here, or you want to know, do you have a video that touches on this subject, just let us know, and we can get one to you.
Okay, great.
I think I neglected to mention that Ed Guy is published in, it's a companion piece for the DVD. We publish it together. So okay. They're distributed
Great.
Together.
Great. Oh, Richard, Professor Chang would like to know if you're available. He can call you in 5 minutes.
Well, I'm not at my office right now, but he could try my cell phone, and I think he's got that.
Okay. Okay, I'm sorry. We're all out of time. We do have to close the session. But we really appreciate all your efforts. We apologize for the beginning late start, but we really enjoyed your presentation and look forward to working with you in the future.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.